Pfalzgraf against Rusk County is the next case for argument. Mr. Sachs.
May it please the court. The district court improperly weighed evidence and made credibility determinations in granting plaintiff's motion for partial summary judgment on his Fourth Amendment claims. It did this in two ways. It improperly weighed evidence and made credibility determinations as to whether Deputy Reiser exceeded the scope of the mission or unreasonably prolonged the stop without reasonable suspicion. It also improperly weighed evidence and made credibility determinations about whether there was reasonable suspicion to conduct a protective pat-down. The question of reasonable suspicion should have been left to the jury because there was a room for a difference of opinion concerning the facts or the reasonable inferences to be drawn from them.
Is the representation that reasonable suspicion cannot be determined as a matter of law, that is a fact question?
Reasonable suspicion in certain circumstances is appropriate to be decided as a matter of law, but if the totality of the circumstances creates a situation where jurors could differ or there's room for a difference of opinion about those facts or the inferences, or if it requires credibility determinations, it can be an appropriate question for a jury after trial. Plaintiff alleged an unlawful extension of the traffic stop to investigate illegal drug activity. It was at least a jury question whether Reisner exceeded the scope of the mission or didn't have independent reasonable suspicion. The district court defined Deputy Reisner's mission too narrowly in analyzing whether it had been unreasonably extended. It could have been a jury question as to whether Reisner exceeded the scope of the mission. When defining the scope of the mission, it's important to look at the totality of the facts and the circumstances that are present to the officer at the time. When the inferences drawn from those facts and circumstances can be subject to differing interpretations, whether the stop exceeded the scope of the mission can be a question for the jury.
What are those facts that the defendants contend were disputed and precluded the judge being able to grant summary judgment?
It was more the inferences and credibility determinations made about the universe of facts, and those included facts that led Deputy Reiser to believe there may have been the plaintiff may have been driving under the influence of drugs. Or
I was asking, what are the facts that are disputed?
The facts that are disputed would be whether Deputy Reiser had noticed plaintiff's vehicle at a known drug house prior to seeing the vehicle the night. That would be a disputed fact that the court discredited or made a credibility determination about. Otherwise, whether the driving pattern was suspicious. It's not disputed that he was driving around randomly late at night in a rural area and went on side streets to turn around and go back the way he came, but the inferences from those facts are disputed by the parties and were resolved by.
So again, what I'm not hearing is facts that are disputed. What to draw from those facts? So the direction he drove, but are you suggesting that whether or not he was driving erratically, that was those facts that added up to the judge finding that he was not driving erratically, those were disputed? That's what I'm hearing you tell me.
That's correct.
Okay.
Another fact that was disputed with regard to that circumstance was that the plaintiff purposely avoided a number of parked law enforcement vehicles.
He didn't dispute that. He said that's intentionally why I didn't go there.
Again, yeah, correct way of saying it, the inference drawn from that fact was disputed. I believe that a, at least there's a jury question that whether the travel route and the events circling before the stop create a jury question about whether there's the scope of the mission included not just removing the snow from the license plate and involved investing in that suspicious activity.
Did you ever ask the district court to send this to a jury? Plaintiff's brief says that you told the district judge that all the facts were undisputed and that summary judgment was therefore appropriate. Is it a legal error for a district judge to take a party at its word?
No, Your Honor, but in this case, Deputy Reiser was not precluded from arguing that his view of the facts were undisputed and that, in his view, determined summary judgment is a matter of law for him, and make that same argument to defend against plaintiff's partial motion for summary judgment. He was not required to argue against himself in defending against the plaintiff's motion for partial summary judgment.
It's a perfectly normal argument in the district court to say, we think the facts are established well enough for us to win, but if you disagree with that, please send this to trial. Did you ever say anything like that to the district judge?
We were not in a position to make that statement because...
The answer will be either yes or no.
No, we didn't.
No,
but the existence of those disputed facts were not evident until the district court made the credibility determinations and resolved what we believed were undisputed facts against Stephanie Reiser. Even if the scope of the mission was exceeded, it was also a question for the jury whether Reisner had independent reasonable suspicion to continue to investigate for drug crimes. Again, there was a room for difference of opinion concerning the facts or the reasonable inferences to be drawn from them. A jury could conclude that there was reasonable suspicion based on a number of factors, some of them which I've touched on before, but plaintiff's odd driving pattern, driving around aimlessly late at night. Once he gets pulled over and Deputy Reisner makes initial contact, plaintiff's in an agitated state. Deputy Reisner also reported that he believed plaintiff had dilated pupils and appeared to have dry mouth. Deputy Reisner also thought that plaintiff offered inconsistent explanations for his driving pattern.
What was the reason given for pulling him over?
The reason he said it to the plaintiff was that he had an obstructed license plate.
All right.
Covered in snow. Again, plaintiff also told Deputy Reisner he was avoiding police. Deputy Reisner had noticed the vehicle being parked in front of a known drug house. And the district court disregarded the testimony and from Deputy Reisner that he noticed dilated pupils or had dry and cotton mouth. And I think those were also subject to different inferences. A jury could find that his testimony about that was credible. A jury could find his testimony about seeing the vehicle at a drug house was credible. And the district court resolved those credibility determinations. I want to turn to the protective frisk for weapons, which is the other Fourth Amendment issue in this case. So plaintiff also alleged Deputy Reisner violated his Fourth Amendment rights by conducting a protective frisk when he asked him to step out of the vehicle. An officer can conduct a protective pat-down if there's reasonable suspicion that the subject's concealing a weapon or poses a danger to the officer or others. There's a few overriding principles.
If we look at the timeline in this case, when did the officer notice that Paul's Graf had dilated pupils?
It was the period from when Deputy Reiser pulls him over and makes initial contact with him, where he takes his license and registration and has a brief conversation with him about where he was going.
So you think it's in the first 3 minutes?
That would be accurate.
Because according to the footage we have, it's at 3 minutes and 12 seconds that he requests dispatch to run the license.
That would be accurate. During the first initial contact, he noticed the dilated pupils. He testified that he noticed the dilated pupils and believed that the individual had cotton mouth. With regards to the protective frisk, there were a number of factors we argue that W. Reiser testified about that gave him at least reasonable suspicion to...
Why do we worry about that? If I understand your argument correctly, it's that protecting the public from impaired drivers is part of the purpose of any stop. And if that purpose vests before minute three of the stop, almost everything else that happens is irrelevant. But your brief never gives us the timing and doesn't seem to make that argument. Is there... What am I missing here?
The independent reasonable suspicion to continue the stop would have happened in that 3 minutes after he makes contact and then goes to run the plates. I think that's the timeline.
No, I asked you for the timeline. 3 minutes was what you came up with, because that's when the officer asked to run the license check.
So when he comes back from running that license check, I would say that the scope of the original mission to investigate the suspicious driving pattern would keep on going, and essentially until he goes and runs the dog, which it happens, I think within 10 minutes after, within that 10 minute period after the initial 3 minutes before he runs the check. I can see I'm running into my rebuttal time. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for that.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Stroop.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. This appeal is the first time that the defendants have asserted that there are any genuine issues of material fact that would entitle them to a jury trial on any of Fallsgraf's claims. Their arguments are waived, and the case should end there. Even if the arguments are not waived, however, Fallsgraf still prevails. He cannot have a trial on reasonable suspicion. Reisner cannot have a trial on qualified immunity. What he's asking for is for this court to allow a jury to look at the same undisputed facts that the district court did and yet arrive at a different legal conclusion. This is impossible.
Let's back up there, counsel. Is it undisputed? District court here discounted Reisner's account, but can you really say, based on the video, that there's no dilated pupils? Can you say that there wasn't, that Reisner didn't think there was dry mouth or cotton mouth? How are those facts not disputed?
Thank you, Your Honor. So I'd like to make a clarification. The district court did not discount Reisner's determination that there were dilated pupils or that there was dry mouth. The district court simply said that even if what Reisner is saying is true, we conceded below that Reisner did see dilated pupils and that he did think that Fallsgraf had dry mouth. But even taking that into account, it would not provide a reasonable suspicion to extend the traffic stop.
Why not? Our en banc opinion in Cole says that assuring public safety is an important function of every traffic stop. And if you suspect that somebody is driving under the influence, you need to investigate. Otherwise, you can't assure public safety.
Yes. In this case, the reason for the initial traffic stop was the snow-covered license plate, and Reisner himself testified at his deposition that there was nothing about Fallsgraf's driving that would lead him to believe that Fallsgraf was driving under the influence.
Yeah, that's why one wants to look at the dilated pupils. When that was discovered in the timeline, are you contending that extending the stop for 3 whole minutes until that was discovered is too long?
Well, the dilated pupils here need to be viewed within the totality of the circumstances. And taking into the totality of the circumstances here, there was not a reasonable suspicion that Fosgraf was driving under the influence. But I'd like to back up a little bit here, because the question of whether there was a reasonable suspicion that Fosgraf was driving under the influence is not a question that can be submitted to the jury in the first place.
Yeah, I'm not worried about juries for the purpose of this. I'm trying to get the legal principles straight. Now, I could imagine a factual dispute about whether the dilated pupils might have had another source other than being under the influence of drugs. Was such an argument made? I didn't see it in the brief.
There's an argument that the dilated pupils could simply be a function of it being nighttime when this traffic stop occurred. But the main argument that we're making is that even assuming that Reisner viewed Fosgraf's pupils as dilated, that still is not enough to extend the stop here. And that's the argument.
When had the mission of the traffic stop been completed, based on your assessment?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
When was the mission of the traffic stop completed?
The mission of the traffic stop was completed about 3 minutes into the interaction when Reisner brushed the snow off of Mr. Fosgraf's license plate.
Go ahead, Judge. If that is the point where the traffic stop, at 3 minutes in, and we run the plates, what other facts do we have, just the facts, that we have to extend it to ensure that he is safe to drive?
At that point, the stop should have ended. At that point, there are no facts that would demonstrate that Mr. Fosgraf was under the influence and that the traffic stop should be extended.
So you want us to hold that as a matter of law, if an officer discovers that somebody is driving with dilated pupils and tells a story that seems to make minimal sense, as a matter of law, the officer must let him go immediately?
So I'd like to clarify that a little bit, Your Honor. So the determination that the district court made here was not that it did not believe Reisner that he saw the dilated pupils. It was that the fact that he saw dilated pupils without more does not establish any reasonable suspicion that Fosgraf was actually under the influence of drugs.
And as a matter of law, seeing dilated pupils can never, as a matter of law, justify any further investigation the public from an impaired driver.
What
case establishes that rule? It's certainly not our en banc decision in Cole.
And that's not what I'm arguing today, Your Honor. What I'm arguing is, in this case, we have Reisner saying that he saw dilated pupils, and we don't have any foundation to establish how Reisner could connect dilated pupils with any impairment of drugs. The district court, in its decision, noted that Reisner is not a drug recognition expert. That's true. He's not a drug recognition expert, and there's nothing in the record indicating any training or experience that he had in determining whether a person is under the influence of drugs. So without that necessary foundation...
So you think only physicians can arrest people for impaired driving? Because if you don't have a medical education, you can't spot what's dangerous?
Not at all, Your Honor.
This strikes me as an extraordinary thing for a lawyer to say.
Not at all, Your
Honor. You and I are also not physicians.
Correct, Your Honor, and that's not what I'm arguing. I'm arguing that in this record, we need a little bit more information from Deputy Reisner about the training and experience that he had in identifying signs of drug use, and we don't have anything
to that effect. It's from a standard of objectiveness.
Sorry?
The standard is objective.
Correct, the standard is objective.
So Officer Smith could have made the stop or extended it, but Officer Reisner couldn't, and the Constitution distinguishes between the hypothetical Officer Smith and the actual Officer Reisner. What law do you rely on for that proposition?
Well, the Constitution does not make that distinction. That's true, Your Honor.
No, it doesn't.
But in any record of a case, we need testimony regarding the officer's training and experience that leads them to make the conclusions that they do based on their observations.
Why?
And in this case, we do not have that.
Why? The Supreme Court has held, actually, that if the ability of a dog to sniff the odors of drugs is contested, there has to be actual evidence. You have to put the dog to the test. Is there any comparable holding that you have to put the officer to the test, confront him with 10 different eye pictures, and see if he can tell you which really shows impairment and which doesn't?
No, Your Honor.
I'm just not aware of any case saying that, and certainly the district judge didn't rely on any.
I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about our primary argument on appeal, which is waiver, and that the Deputy Reisner waived all of the claims that he is making before this court today because he did not raise them in the district court. This court is familiar with the principle that a party may not raise the issue for the first time on appeal, and this contention applies to summary judgment just as it does in any other context. This court has said that as a party seeking to defeat a motion for summary judgment is required to wheel out all its artillery to defeat it, and that artillery will often include an argument that genuine issues of material fact require a trial. But in this case, that is an argument that Reisner never made to the district court. Indeed, both in his own summary judgment motion and in response to our summary judgment motion, Reisner exclusively argued that there are no undisputed facts. There are no undisputed facts. And the district court did exactly what Reisner asked it to do, to decide legal questions based on undisputed facts.
How does that get you to us affirming if there were dilated pupils and we find reasonable suspicion?
So this court cannot make that determination in this appeal because that argument was not raised by my friend on the other side. The notice of appeal in this case specifically targets our summary judgment motion as the decision that is being appealed. So there are two things that this court could do in this appeal. Number one is affirm, or number two, it could order a trial. This court could not determine as a matter of law that that Reisner was entitled to summary judgment because there's no argument being made that he's entitled to summary judgment. He's only arguing that he's entitled to a trial. The argument that Reisner made in the district court and makes here is distilled, I think, in his reply brief. On page 4 of his reply brief, Deputy Reisner says this. He says he was not required to argue that there were disputed issues of facts that precluded summary judgment, as opposed to arguing that the undisputed facts precluded summary judgment. And respectfully, yes, he was. He was required to argue that there were disputed facts in the district court. The situation that we have here is exactly the same as the situation that this court dealt with in the Ryan case, which we cite on page 20 of our brief. In Ryan, what we have is very similar to here in that we have two cross motions for summary judgment that were filed. It's true that the filing of a cross motion does not waive an argument that there should be a trial, but what does waive the argument that there should be a trial is the failure to dispute any facts in response to the other side's summary judgment motion. And that is what we have here. What the Ryan court said was that despite filing their own cross motion for summary judgment, the party there was required to set forth specific facts showing why summary judgment on behalf of the other side was not appropriate. That shortcoming was fatal to the appeal in that case, and it similarly is fatal to the appeal here. The court said, in light of their failure to do so, appellants have waived this issue under the long-standing rule that a party opposing a summary judgment motion must inform the trial court of the reasons, legal or factual, why summary judgment should not be entered. If it does not do so and loses the motion, it cannot raise such issues on appeal. That is exactly what we have here. Reisner specifically, repeatedly, and exclusively argued below that the facts are undisputed. And when he asked the district court to decide as a matter of law based on those undisputed facts, he cannot come to this court and now say that he should have a trial.
Was there no finding of the dilated pupils before the three? I'm at 3 minutes and 18 seconds into the body cam video. Was there no finding regarding the eyes?
As far as a finding regarding the eyes, the district court said that, so we conceded below that Reisner saw dilated pupils.
That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. And what point?
At what point? I don't believe there was a specific determination as to what point the officer saw dilated pupils. The arguments that my friend on the other side makes are that he's entitled to a trial on reasonable suspicion and that he's entitled to a trial on qualified immunity. Both reasonable suspicion and qualified immunity are questions of law that are to be determined by the court and are not to be determined by a jury. So the remedy that my friend on the other side is seeking is simply not something that this court can provide. As I said before, their summary judgment motion is not before this court. It is Falsgraf's summary judgment motion that is before this court. And the only thing that this court can do is either affirm or order a trial. I'll conclude by reiterating my argument that all of the claims that that Reisner makes on appeal are waived, and that even if those arguments are not waived, he is seeking a trial on a question of law that this court simply cannot give. And if the court has no other questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Your Honor. Anything further, Mr. Sachs?
I'd like to first touch on the on counsel's reference to the Ryan case. That case is so factually distinguishable for the one here that should not govern and shouldn't control. In that case, the party specifically chose not to dispute a proposed fact that the employer had sold all or substantially all of its assets to a buyer. Here, Deputy Reisner did not fail to raise an issue or make a knowing decision to concede certain facts or arguments. The district court disregarded facts presented by Deputy Reisner, made credibility determinations about certain facts, and resolved those disputes against Deputy Reisner. At the time of the cross motions for summary judgment, Deputy Reisner wasn't able to anticipate that what he viewed as the undisputed facts would actually be found, would be resolved against him. With regards to the qualified immunity argument, there are cases where qualified immunity can go to the jury. The factual basis to determine whether qualified immunity is appropriate can be developed through testimony and presentation of evidence to the jury. The jury would decide the issue of historical fact, and then the court would then decide the clearly established inquiry, usually through either special interrogatories or as a Rule 50 motion after the conclusion of the case. I don't think Deputy Reisner is precluded from arguing qualified immunity, especially under the Fourth Amendment, where there's a substantial overlap between the immunity issue and the principal issue on the merits, namely the arguable reasonable suspicion analysis. I want to touch base on the protective frisk for weapons. A main reason that the district court found that there was not reasonable suspicion is because it disregarded Deputy Reisner's testimony that he believed plaintiff was under the influence of drugs. There's a noted connection between drug use and drug crimes and weapons, and if the district court—
It was under the influence.
Under
That's
the influence.
That's what he was pursuing, right? Under the influence of a controlled substance. And there were three reasons: him being agitated, he thought, dry mouth, and the dilated pupils.
The judge, yes.
Those were the reference points. And the reference points in particular in regards to the pupils, was the judge basing that on the body cam video or footage?
I believe that the judge looked at the body cam video and discredited what Deputy Reisner testified to in his deposition and his affidavit, and that a reasonable juror could look at that body cam video in conjunction with Deputy Reisner's testimony and could find it credible that he had dilated pupils. And that even the video, I believe it looks like the pupils dilated when he shined the flashlight in his face, which would have been potentially another consideration. There's case law that says common signs of impairment, such as dilated pupils, there's no need to have special drug recognition training. And I see my time is up. we would ask the district court.
Well, I gather there wasn't a request to test Officer Reisner to see if he was any good. But what if it turns out that most people have unsupported beliefs about signs of impaired driving? Wouldn't you have to have some reason to believe, to show that those beliefs are true? I mean, as I said, I'm not a physician. I don't know what really does show impaired driving.
A law enforcement officer who has a basic background and knowledge in detecting crime as part of their normal training and going through police academy,
how do we know that any of this is correct? The world is full of beliefs that are basically superstitious, that a lot of people have, but that aren't true empirically. How do we know which of these beliefs is true empirically?
Well, that's why it would be a question for a jury to evaluate the credibility.
No, the jury would do it based on evidence, not on credibility. I assume that Officer Reisner sincerely believed that dilated pupils show a danger when driving, right? Credibility wouldn't tell us whether that belief was reasonable or likely or true. It seems to me very difficult for lawyers to be assuming that police never make mistakes about medicine, which is what this is. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Your Honors.